Hello, Sales Change listeners. This is episode 16, episode 16 of 17 of the Sales Change podcast. Today's guest is Lee Hill. He's the managing director of Insightful. We're going to have a chat about how and when they started, exactly what do Insightful do, why they don't work normal hours, and also what's the weirdest thing that they've had to insight on a website. You're going to find out all about that and more in this episode. Remember, go to the website. It's www.saleschange.co.uk/newsletter. Get the Sales Change snippet in your inbox every Monday morning, 9:45. Enjoy this episode. Hello, Lee. Welcome to episode 16 of the Sales Change podcast. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you.
How's lockdown keeping you?
Can't complain, to be honest with you. You know, there's lots of people out there that are not being well. There's lots of key workers out there doing vital jobs. So, yeah, it's been tough as a business owner, but in the grand scheme of things, definitely can't complain.
You were just telling me that you're on your third laptop.
Yeah, IT is not my forte, and I had a rubbish laptop coming into lockdown. I had a nightmare with Argos getting a new one, but I'm happy now. Fair time lucky.
Is it running all right?
It's amazing. It's literally amazing. It's literally. Do you not remember going from kind of dial up to super fast broadband? That's what it's like. I'm already probably about 15% more efficient than I have been.
So tell me about your company, Lee.
Cool. So Insightful was set up in May, or we formed the company in May 2016, but didn't start trading until that September. It was just myself initially. And we literally had one product, and this was a product auditing the digital marketing of brands. I'd worked both client side and agency side, and just felt that there needed to be a service where a brand with confidence could get an independent review of their digital marketing, you know, from a company that weren't trying to sell them anything, but was just trying to give them a reality check as to how good the digital was and what more they could be doing and the reality of how much it was going to cost them to generate sales and inquiries online.
So is this just to see how effective their marketing is?
Yeah, essentially.
Whether they were making the impact that they thought they were.
Yeah, it was to make a snapshot, especially with digital, because a lot of the focus with digital goes towards driving traffic into a website. And, you know, a lot of brands produce a website and then just leave it. Where actually, if you think about it, you're driving all that traffic into a website on an average, and we've audited over 100 websites through this period, they only convert generally at about 1% that we see. So you think they're driving all that traffic into the website and then only 1% of people, visitors, become a customer or make an inquiry. You know, even if you can get that to 2%, you've doubled your sales. You know, and almost just showing that in real numbers to businesses is almost, it's almost like a light bulb moment for them of, gosh, yeah, if we just invested a bit more in the website or a bit more in digital over here, we could just be, you know, increasing sales by quite significant amounts. So it's a bit of an education piece really as well that we really wanted to kind of bring back to the marketplace. And yeah, that's where we started.
What's your background, Lee?
So my background is, so I've always been down in the kind of Bournemouth and Poole area. All my family originally from this area. Moved down from Leeds, went to Bournemouth University, studied marketing. And I've been really fortunate to work for some great agencies and also work for some great brands heading up marketing and e-commerce teams, predominantly financial services brands. So I've had that nice balance of seeing both sides of the sectors of agency and client side, and I've worked for numerous brands. I've typically moved around, you know, from 2003, from graduating university, every 2 to 3 years. And that was on purpose, actually, not because I didn't enjoy working for some of the brands that I worked for, but just for that kind of that diversity, you know, the kind of being able to work in different segments, different business cultures, different sizes of business, just was a great way to educate myself.
Is that quite common in the creative industry, moving between jobs 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, I don't know if it's because I think more recent times over the last 2 to 3 decades, I think some of it's forced because of redundancies and stuff like that, to be honest with you. I think people move around a bit more as well, you know, the old thing of going up to London and coming back as well, and, you know, just getting a different feel for different paces of city life and things like that. Though, you know, as we all know, Bournemouth and the Poole area, it's, you know, it's sort of one of the fastest growing digital hubs and has done for probably the last 10 years, due to you've got the university, you've got fantastic financial services base of, and there's over 50 top financial services brands in the area. And just that kind of, so you've got that melting pot of education, language schools, all sorts going on that have kind of accumulated in this kind of fast paced environment that kind of feeds itself.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So why did you set up Insightful? Why did you go from like jumping jobs 2 or 3 times or every 2 to 3 years to start Insightful?
So I got to, you know, mid kind of 30s, was getting a bit disillusioned by the corporate world. Corporates these days, very much, you know, a lot of them see changing management a lot more rapidly these days, you know, 2 to 3 years and you've got at the top a change of management, which means a change of direction. And you can be doing great work, but then all of a sudden the rug's pulled from underneath you and everyone's running from one direction to the complete opposite direction. And once you go through that a few times, you're like, gosh, you know, I'm sure I could be adding more value elsewhere by doing something else. You know, so you do.
Do you think that's a catalyst for changing the jobs?
Massively. Again, I've been through lots of buyouts and mergers and all that kind of thing, and it does get you down because you're just unsettled, and there is no such thing as a job for life these days either. So yeah, you know that appetite of managing, you know, your own risk. Nobody's safe anymore, and anybody that thinks they're safe, they're mad, quite frankly. So, you know, you might as well go off and try and do something yourself, you know, if you're inclined in that way to do so, you know, to take that risk, to take that jump. I did a lot of planning beforehand. I went and spoke to a lot of MDs. I almost wanted to learn from their mistakes of the things that they wouldn't do, the things they did do. I tell this story a lot, but one of the things that kind of stuck out for me that I kind of implemented straight away was build a team or bring in other directors around yourself that can do things better than yourself, which I think we hear a lot. I think that's quite a common kind of cliche, but also people that will do things that you just don't like doing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I'm a person who doesn't like paperwork, and my biggest wish right now, and I don't think my main job would allow it, but I really want a PA. I want somebody just to like book my appointments for me, take the calls for me, and then shield everything from me so I can just focus on what I've got to do.
Yeah.
Who were the first people that you brought into Insightful?
So there's a guy called Chris Noonan, who's co-director, co-founder. We were working at a brand together called Gallagher's. A large financial services brand. We worked there for 3 years together. It's where we met each other for the first time as well. And when I was looking to exit, I always wanted to also, having spoken to some MDs, I also very quickly realised that I wanted to enjoy the journey with some other people. I didn't want to just go alone and do this thing because, you know, it can be a lonely place trying to run a business by yourself. So I'd already started to think about, okay, what kind of people could come in and kind of, you know, do better than pick up my weaknesses, essentially, but also pick up the things that I just don't enjoy doing. Like you say, mine's not paperwork, but lots of other things instead. And, you know, so Chris was absolutely ideal. I mean, our strengths and weaknesses couldn't be any more kind of polar opposite.
What's your biggest strengths, Lee?
So I'm a bit more of a strategist, a bit more of a long-term planner, but I think I'm really good at coordinating stuff and gluing stuff together with that plan.
Yeah. Does that include the people as well? Do you glue the people together?
Yeah, I think in terms of a, Yeah, I think that's a combination of all three directors, actually. We all bring different things to the table when it comes to people and culture. I think we've been very well balanced in that area. It's not something that we really kind of planned. It just seems to work quite well so far anyway. We're hoping to grow bigger and obviously complications come with that. And Chris is massively into the detail. He's a fantastic planner. He's a lot more emotional than I am. I'm a very rational, very numbers driven kind of guy. So it's a really nice blend when we're with clients and when we're trying to engage with them. And that's why, you know, from a functional level, I run the business, all the support areas, new business, all the planning forward, where Chris is absolutely ideal. He heads up all operations and client management and client delivery.
Yeah. And who else did you bring in? Was it just you and Chris at the start?
So it was myself initially for a year because we just couldn't afford both salaries, to be honest with you. But Chris did, continued working at Gallagher's for the year and helped massively behind the scenes as well. And again, doing all the things that I'm rubbish at, like the tech that we mentioned earlier on as well, which even to today, he gets lumbered with, unfortunately for him, which I'm constantly reminded of for my lack of IT skills and awareness. But that's how businesses function and management teams function. You know, it's a constant. It's not a trade-off. It's just an acceptance of, actually, you know, you've got a finite amount of time. How can that be used to be of value to the business? Where can you use your strengths? And my strength is, you know, directing the business and heading up those new business conversations, you know, going out there and listening to people's problems and seeing where we can help. The other director is a guy called George Beverly, who I worked at. There was a group of agencies called the Emerge Group. It's kind of disbanded now and different bits have been sold off to other groups. That was a 300-person sized group. And George was working there as a creative director. Again, just I couldn't have wished for two better directors, honestly. You know, the skill sets that they bring to the table and the way that we're able just to talk to each other, communicate. You know, we talk and agree on everything. You know, we don't necessarily agree initially on everything, but we just talk through things and we always come to the same conclusion as the direction we're going to take, and I'm very thankful for that.
Do you think it's important that you guys all do that away from your team so that you all agree on the direction before you then relay it to your team?
Yeah. Another thing that I've learned is, you know, you can be great at your discipline at marketing. You know, all three of us have had a high degree of success. I don't think there's, you know, and again, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but I don't think there's a business that I've been at where I've not left it in a better state in terms of improving performance. Chris is very similar. George is, as always, obviously more on the creative side and less involved in commercials. But, you know, definitely the impact he's had on brands has been tremendous. And, you know, he's a very well-known and respected figure in his own right in terms of what he's achieved and what he brings to the table in terms of skill set of just understanding research, UX, CX. He's just, we call him the brain internally, actually, because he's just a fantastic guy. And he just comes across really well. He's very understated. There's no ego there, so he's very approachable, very warm, and very light, nice.
So just for anybody who's thinking about like leaving their company and starting up, what process did you go through? Did you need like capital behind you? Did you just step out and do it?
No, again, I did a lot of planning. I had the conversations with the MDs. There was a lot of work to develop the service as well, and to also take that and just get a feel of what people thought about it. I mean, this was an audit that was, it's grown now. You know, we call it full digital review, but it's 150 slides of analysis. And to give you an example rare I think that is, when we were at Gallagher's, we were engaged, I won't mention the name, but we were engaged with one of the top digital agencies in the UK. I mean, these guys are global. They bill millions and millions and millions of pounds each week. And I'd been fortunate with the brands I'd worked with that I'd had, again, big agencies that I managed with big, you know, budgets. And very a lot of the time, I don't know if it's because of digital and the amount of data that we now have, but agencies, if they're not seen to be doing stuff, they're not always seen to be adding value. So the start of a conversation is not, oh, we've been and spoken to your audiences, or we've analysed your audiences, or looked at your competitors, or we understand your marketplace. It's more a conversation of, oh, let's go do some campaign work, let's go build a new website, let's go do something. Where I felt that, you know, being a bit of a marketing purist, I felt that the market was, there was a gap being created there where not enough planning was being done up front. And that was the point of this document, again, was to give businesses a snapshot as to where they were, but to also show them a proper, you know, what was going on around them. You know, what were the competitors doing digitally in terms of messaging? How well received were they from their competitors? Sorry, their audiences. What more could they be doing for their audiences in regards to the website and the way that they engage?
What's hitting? What's not? What's landing? What's creating resonance?
You know, let's running off and doing stuff. We use the analogy of it's like building a house. You know, you'd hopefully go to an architect first who planned this stuff out for you. You know, would sit down with you and say, okay, well, what are the requirements? Do you know your kitchen? What do you want to do with it in the daytime versus the evening? You know, what kind of space? How many people in the house? You know, all these requirements of understanding the audience, you know, and then feeding it into a builder who has a nice spec, can't go off plan, start adding extra windows and charging you another $5,000 and here and there, just so that everyone was clear on expectation of where you were trying to go and what was going to be delivered. I just felt that we, you know, from some of the agencies that I was engaged with, and again, there's some top caliber agencies, that wasn't always the starting point, and that's what I wanted to get back to.
What's the culture like at Insightful?
So again, I wouldn't profess to have nailed this. I don't think you ever do, and I think...
Is it intentional, your culture, or is it just naturally occurring?
No, there is a lot of intentional elements to it. As an example, we don't work to set hours in the business. Right. So when we set up the business, again, we've kind of challenged the norms of everything where we can. So first of all, we looked at, okay, hours. Even as owners, do we want to be chained to a desk 9 to 5? No. Is that the reality of how agencies work anyway? You know, the hours that you put in swinging roundabout, sometimes you need to do a bit of work in the evening, sometimes you don't. Also, you know, the traffic around the area and probably most cities is just awful 9 to 5. So do we really want to be spending 2 hours a day in traffic when we could be working and be effective? So we come to a point of actually also, how do we get the best out of people? And what we come to was that, well, why don't we just be task orientated as opposed to time orientated? Let's be clear on what tasks we've got to complete each week for clients and forward planning for the business. Let's make sure we allocate we've got a good feel of hours so we're not absolutely murdering people, you know, in terms of the amount of hours they've got to do. And let's just try and be grown up about it. If people can deliver what they need to do on time to a high standard, what's the problem? You know, why chain people to a desk? So our working day actually starts at 9:30 in the morning.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah, we have what we call a stand-up where we each go around, we talk about what we did the day before, what we're working on that day, and we highlight anything that's blocking us from doing what we're supposed to be doing that day. That might be me saying, oh, George, I need you just to review this for me, okay, just to spare me a little bit of time. It's just so that everybody know. It's not about even managing people's workloads because we use things like Asana. We can see that. We've got the visibility. It's just it is actually just to see where people might get stuck and they need some support. So we thought we'd trial that 4 years later. It works well, you know, for us.
How many people have you got in your team now, Lee?
So again, this is a bit different to the usual kind of, you know, what you'd classify.
I'm detecting a theme now.
Yeah, as a full service agency, you know, the thing that griped me when I worked for agencies is that, you know, often it's like a land grab, isn't it? You know, you go in and speak to a client and you're being asked to grab as much work as possible. I get that. Yeah. It's business, yeah? But there's also a duty of care where, you know, if you don't feel that your agency is adequately skilled at doing one of those things you've put up your hand to saying you're actually good at, I think that's just wrong.
Yeah.
So the way that we work is we've got at the moment we've got a core team of 8. We're looking to grow that. You know, it's probably about a core team of 20. But around that, what we've tapped into is using really good specialist freelancers. And we're massively upfront with a client. These people come into conversations with us. It's not the old Chinese whispers and everything comes through us. These guys are actively engaged with the client with us as specialists in their own right. Again, it's for us, it's more of a grown-up way of doing business.
Have you ever had clients then approach the freelancers on a separate basis?
Yeah, a couple of times, but in the whole, no. And, yeah, you just front up the conversation and just say, you know, Mr. Client, I think that's a bit cheeky. And you go from there. But ultimately, if they want to go down that route, they go down that route. We're very much about working with the right clients as well. And that's a big focus right now is working with the right clients, the clients that get the value. And value is really key. Because fundamentally, if you're not driving the results for clients, you know, they can't afford to pay you anyway, but you're not getting them to where they wanted to be, you know, and that's the big promise. And I think that's where some agencies fall down. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm not agency bashing here because there's lots of amazing agencies. We just looked at our model and looked at how we could modernize it for our clients.
So you do the audit basis. You do the first stage is, let's say, the audit. So do you do the other stuff as well? So you create content and all that stuff.
So what happened initially, we didn't want to do any solution stuff. So we didn't want to build websites. We didn't want to manage marketing activity. We wanted to come in, we wanted to do an audit and then do some research. You know, go out and speak to your audiences using modern techniques such as one-to-one qualitative research, qualitative web user testing, competitor analysis, all that kind of thing. And we wanted to feed that into our clients' partners, so their agencies, to do great work for them, you know, arming them with great insights.
Hence the name.
Yeah, hence not name. I couldn't believe, you know, when there's not many insightfuls around, I was really looked out there. I think that's the only one creative thing I've managed to pull off in my life, because I'm not very creative generally either. But yeah, what started to happen was we started to feed this stuff into other, you know, their partners or other partners would help them find, and we would walk away. And unfortunately, what we'd see was that the insights that we were feeding in just were implemented poorly in some instances. So all the work we'd done was, you know, was just not, the client just wasn't getting the value out of it. And clients just kept on coming back to us and saying, look, you've done all this great work. We've got lots of confidence in you. Can you please help us implement this stuff? So we started to do that. And to be honest with you, you know,
it's like teaching your kid how to iron, watching them iron for a little bit and then going, no, you're not doing it right. Come here. Come
exactly.
Here, let me show you.
But even initially, it was probably like the, you know, like a young kid asking his brother to iron, because if I'm honest, you know, in terms of processes and work initially, you know, we weren't as, you know, any better. You know, being really honest, and when we had to go away and we drew a line in the sand and we said, look, we need to stop this for a bit. We need to spend a lot of time investing and looking at our processes and how we do things, you know, on the kind of solution end of helping clients build websites and commit marketing campaigns and stuff. So that's what we had to do. We went through a really tough learning period. But that's a good thing with us, is that we're acceptant when we've done things wrong and when we need to learn, when we need to get our heads down, allocate some proper time and map out processes and do all that kind of thing. 4 years later, I think we're smashing it now, if I'm honest, because we've put all that time and effort to... So what typically happens now is, you know, we'll get approached by a client who's got a very specific problem in terms of, you know, they're not getting enough growth, they don't have a growth plan, or quite frankly, they've been burnt by an agency, you know, of promises and stuff that are not being delivered. It's where we're picking up a lot of business now. And we're just very realistic with businesses. We can't fix the world for you. I remember one experience where a client had a target. He'd spoken to 4 agencies, and every one of those agencies had told him that they could get the business 100% of the targets. We did our digital review and we said, digital's only going to get you 25% of those sales. You know, the other 75% is going to be offline.
Transparency is there.
Yeah, it's going to be offline. It's going to be field sales guys and telesales and complete offline stuff that we don't do. We didn't do at that stage. And so it's just that honest conversation from the start, you know, what needs to realistically happen. Yes, you're going to need some budget guys. You know, it's the way of the world. You need to go find a little bit of budget for us to get you going. Hopefully we'll bring you some sales in and then we can ramp up budget and go again. You know, that's how things are. And that model seems to work quite well. So we either do an audit or people actually come to us for research. They're like, look, I realise that we've been trying to do all this stuff and it's just guesswork and assumptions. We really don't know our audience or how best to engage them and service them and all this kind of thing. So that's where we start, you know, and we've got all that great insight and we can guide them then to develop effective messaging and websites.
Yeah.
So then the work tends to flow from that research base and that analysis into content strategies, digital strategies, and website wireframes. And then the solution stuff, that's where we bring in a lot of partners. So we've got PPC specialists, SEO specialists, web design and web development specialists that we bring in and we feed that work in. But we own the whole process still.
Yeah, yeah. It's all under the Insightful banner.
Exactly. We manage and oversee that. But again, we're very transparent with regards to who we bring in. You know, we front that up from the beginning and we explain again, we're bringing these people in because they can do stuff to a level that we can't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we only need to bring them in when we need them as well. Unlike a larger agency that's got bums on seats that they need paying for, you know. So they often assign tasks to people that maybe not might not be quite right for the client in terms of the skills and experience that the client deserves and needs.
But they're being paid, so they need to create that content regardless.
Exactly.
So content agencies will try and set the trends. So you've got to try and be one step ahead of that trend, haven't you? You've got to try and understand what that trend is and then what the next trend is going to happen so that you can then give the insights to, right, this is what your content trend is at the moment. What's the next thing and how is that going to impact your brand?
Yeah.
So what is the next trend? Where do you see the industry going in the next 5 to 10 years?
What, in terms of agencies or...?
In terms of agencies, but also content strategies.
Content strategies. Well, do you know what? Again, we don't guess and assume this stuff. We literally go out and speak to the audiences of our clients. And the thing that I absolutely love this is that about 25% of our findings on average, nobody expected to hear what we hear. You know, it's just you realize how crazy people actually are, you know, when with regards to what influences them, what triggers them to even think about buying a product or looking for a service, you know, what the research and buying process might look like.
What's the craziest thing that's stood out for you?
Oh, the craziest thing. Okay, all right. Okay, so I'll give you an example. We did a piece of work for a university. There was two projects. There was one to look at how the website could engage prospect students better and another one for prospective staff members, okay?
Yeah.
So you've got a website, you land on it, you know, it really is geared up for students, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
It's a university website. When we did the research with staff, again, we spoke to people that we split into two groups of lecturers versus general admin support staff for the actual university. We got them to look at the client's website. We didn't tell them it was a client. And we got them to look at 10 other university websites. And there was two simple tasks. One was find the job section area to apply for a role. And all we do, it's called behavioral research. We give them those tasks, we put a computer in front of them, and we'd let them do whatever they do. And we just fire questions at them as they do it. Oh, why did you click on that? Why were you drawn to that? What did you think about this? What did you think about that? When we could see that they're kind of drawn to certain areas and aspects. So we did that. Of the staff members, not one staff member could find the careers button on the homepage. Now, when we reviewed this website, we looked at it, we're like, oh yeah, careers button, click on that, click through. What they were doing is they were clicking on apply, but the apply button was for students.
Right.
Yeah, and it was just that change of mindset of someone, a staff member, thinking, oh, I've gone to a university website, I'm looking for a job. Oh, there's an apply button there. Maybe that refers to me.
Yeah.
And they clicked on it and then just saw that it was courses. And they were like, oh, this is the wrong place. Tried to click out. Then we're looking around again. And just never found where they wanted to go. And we asked them how this made them feel. And the general consensus was, well, this university obviously doesn't care about its staff because it can't even provide a nice clear button for people to get to a job section. But the what we found out was it was just the design of the button. It had been blended into the design so well to make the site look nice that it had become functionally inept in sticking out a little bit for potential staff members.
So the website had obviously been designed for a specific audience, which was the students.
Yeah, yeah.
But they hadn't considered that 30, 40% would be the staff as well.
Well, I think they had, but I think the way they'd implemented the design was just a failure. And again, instead of just putting this in front of a few people before they launched this thing, they made this assumption.
Yeah.
And it's those assumptions that we come across all the time. So we will run a workshop with a client to undercover what they feel like the research and buying process is for their customers. Again, a lot of agencies do this stuff. So everybody, you've got a room of, you know, amazingly bright, intelligent people assuming what this research and buying process looks like. Then whole marketing campaigns and websites are developed off the back of it. Has anybody spoke to the customer or the prospect to see if it's actually real? Because again, when we do that, we find that actually what people think it is and the reality is massively different at times. And that's what I love. I love it. You know, we say to our clients as well, we don't have any answers for you, but your clients, your prospects and your data does. We know how to mine that to pull together the right way of doing things for you.
That's perfectly. So what we do on every single podcast is we ask the same five questions at the end, and I'm going to ask exactly the same five to you.
Okay.
So the first question is, what would be the worst job you could ever do and why?
Ooh, God, I don't know. Oh, it probably would have to be something to do with admin, wouldn't it? You know, probably similar to you.
Something monotonous.
Something monotonous in an office. I think even being outside, I've always grafted, you know, all the way through uni. I worked at McDonald's for like 5 years and stuff like that. And so even before that, I was, you know, cleaning in Sainsbury's as a nipper, probably illegally, but always works. So that kind of stuff doesn't bother me. It is just that monotonous kind of, you know, paperwork. It's just dull and boring and just no end in sight to it. At least if you're doing something physical, there's almost like a tangible end to it. So yeah, probably paperwork or admin or something like that.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, this is going to throw you. So I might as well just call it out. I wanted to drive tanks.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted to be a tank commander. I'm really into kind of Second World War military history. Lots of the family have been in the military and things. And it was just always a fascination of mine. And up until the age of 15, I wanted to become a tank commander, go to Sandhurst or wherever and become an officer and tank.
You've been to the tank museum then?
Well, do you know what's...
you haven't, have you?
Yeah, I have. You don't know this, but it was my first job out of uni.
Was it?
I was working at the tank museum, and the tank museum are a client of ours now. We're actually building a website for them. So, you know, I've come round full circle in some way, this kind of military connection to tanks.
Brilliant.
Which is just, yeah, it's just brilliant, really.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn. Which is your favourite and why?
It's got to be LinkedIn, not just for business. I think I do take a lot from it. You know, there's some, like any social media platform, there's a lot of rubbish on there, you know. There's some real gems, and I've got a real thing about kind of just accepting that I don't know everything and just always seeking out ways of kind of learning how to do things better. And I think there's just so many great people on there that you can just learn from. So, yeah, definitely LinkedIn.
What was the last book that you read, Lee?
Oh, I hate reading.
You know, I just said that
you
about
listen
LinkedIn.
To audiobooks.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what I was going to say. I go for audiobooks instead. One of the ones I listen to a lot of fiction and stuff like that on audiobooks, but I've actually just downloaded a book on customer experience, which I'm going to read. But before that, I read a great was listening to a great book written by a guy in the FBI who has...
Is this Chris Voss?
I think it might be. I think. Did you speak to him? Did you have him on it, or did you?
I haven't. He's
but you've
one
heard
of my.
Of him.
Yeah, he's one of my like dream guests. I want to get him on. Is it Never Split the Difference?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely great. I just love the kind of emotional intelligence side of just tapping into people as psyche.
I'm connected with Chris on LinkedIn.
Oh, are you? Amazing.
Yeah, and I'm badgering him in order to come on season two of the podcast. So season two will launch in September, but I'm literally badgering him. I sent him an email about 3 weeks, and I've sent him two DMs, but I feel like I'm chasing one of the Kardashians.
he did speak at an event locally somewhere.
Did he?
So yeah, I might have to ping the contact that I know that knows him to see if that can help.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
But yeah, just all that kind of side, I just love it. Again, not to manipulate people, but just as a great way to get through to people that you can genuinely help them. And
yeah, just understanding the psychology of it.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I'd advocate anybody have a listen to that.
And the final question is, which leader do you look up to the most?
There's probably not many kind of that I do look up to. I do look at my past a lot about the people that have, you know, there's been several people that I've worked for that have been, they don't know, to be honest with you, and that have just influenced me massively and mentored me and helped me develop in ways that they wouldn't know because I've been bad at thanking them. But also, honestly, you know, the Chris and George are just absolutely fantastic guys to work with, and I'm constantly learning from them, you know, different perspectives on things, how we should go about things. And I think anybody that goes into business, you know, if it's not all about the money for you, and it's definitely not for us, you know, do it with other people that you can, you know, you've got shared visions and values with.
Collaborate.
Yeah, because you get to share the burden and you just get to learn from others and just enjoy it together. So that's what I'd recommend.
Thank you, mate. Thanks, Lee.
Cool.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Don't go anywhere yet. Julio, tell people where they can get more information.
If you like the podcast, go visit saleschange.co.uk.
That's good, but you said .do.
Saleschange.co.uk. Why don't you head... No, it's bad. It's bad. Go to saleschange.co.uk and... saleschange.co.uk and subscribe to our incredible newsletter. Thanks for listening.